Hey guys, welcome to the Dihedral Podcast. We're here with me, Kaysen, Gaia, and Cody Amakali, the proud owner of Mama Dirt Bag, climbing balm for your hands, and a self-described medical unicorn.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about that phrase, medical unicorn,
yes,
and why you choose it to apply to yourself.
Actually, I didn't. That one of my doctors gave me that label. So I grew up really rural. Very, very low density populations and communities. And when I moved, but I've been sick throughout my life. I've had pneumonia quite a lot. I've had strep throat a lot, different really bad illnesses. But when I say a lot, it's like 30 times in a year or multiple pneumatic episodes within a year. And it was always like, oh, well, I just get sick a lot. And then when I moved to Houston, I ended up getting really, really sick. I went, I had something called septicemia, which is a, basically you get a blood-borne bacterial infection that shuts down your vital organs. And it was about then that the doctors started, and I say doctors because I had a team of doctors at that point, they started tracking how often I was getting sick. And after about, I guess it would be a year and a half, they said, we're going to test your IgG, which is your immunoglobulin. And G stands for the gamma. There's four different kinds of immunoglobulin, and they serve different functions in the body. Some of them help you build immunity. Some help you fight off infections. Others help you create... it's different proteins that help regulate different immune responses, so like a histamine response or an inflammatory response. And I found out that I have a marginal immune system. So normal immunity starts at about 1,500 and above for an Ig count. And I sit at just over 500.
Wow.
So... about the same time that I found that out, I also started having really, really bad joint problems. It got to a place where my husband had to help me like button my shirt for work in the mornings, and I couldn't hold a toothbrush for more than 30 seconds without having to put it down and like shake out, yeah, like make a pump. Right.
Right? And how long ago was this?
I guess I was diagnosed in... 2014, I think. 2014, I think, is when we finally got the diagnosis. And I'd been sick for about, like, consistently sick. I was living off of IV antibiotics for about the 2 years before that. And slowly what ended up happening was my body started shutting down. So I went from being a decent-ish climber to and being really active, to I couldn't run anymore, and then I couldn't climb at all, and then I got to a place where I couldn't even do yoga, and then I got to a place where it took me 45 minutes to just put my feet on the ground to get out of bed in the morning.
So I'm sitting here like with you right now, and it's like, what do you mean? Like, you look great.
Well, thank you.
And before we get to, you know, how that kind of turned around for you, tell us exactly how decent of a climber were you.
Define decent.
Define decent.
I could project... I could red point 13D. And I could project, like, 14.
Wow.
Like, I could... There were two climbs in Red River that were 14s that I had, like, had my eye on. Golden, yeah, golden ticket. I mean, who doesn't want to get on that one, right? But that was like super out of my grade.
Oh my god!
It was
that's
just like
out of my grade, girl. You're good.
Like, what are you talking about? It was one of those things where it's like you watch good, like really good climbers climb, and you just go, I want to do that when I grow up.
Yeah,
like, not a chance. But I was getting pretty good. I was getting pretty competent.
I mean, very few people in their lifetime, even like good climbers, ever climb at that level.
Yeah, I was okay. I was strong.
You were
and,
decent,
and I was decent. And I had a really great community of partners that I climbed with. And I actually didn't start climbing until after my son was born. So 2009, I guess, is when I started climbing. So I had a very short, long run up. Right? Like, it was short and fast and got up there. But I trained a lot.
This is the question that I was going to ask. How much do you train? Because you started climbing when you had a little one. I have a little one, and I struggle to climb because I climb for him, so he can't climb. Yeah. So, and you were a decent climber.
How? She's making air quotes.
Exactly.
Quote. I get the air quote.
Quote, yeah. Decent, unquote.
So, I was really fortunate because I lived in a place where we had, I call it a bouldering mecca. I mean, it was awesome, and it was granite, and it was sharp, and it was hard, and that was where I learned to climb. And I had partners that never let me know the grades. So I would just have to hop on and try it and flail and fall, sometimes whimper, most of the time whimper, and yes, then try again. So I trained outside, right? And then, so I went to Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina. And around Boone, there's within 30 to 45 minutes, 12 decent, huge boulder fields. So you can go get on gneiss, you can get on granite, you could drive across the border into Tennessee and start getting on some really good sandstone. So, like, the breadth of climbing that you get exposed to is super incredible. But at Appalachian State, they also had an outdoor rec program, and they had a climbing wall. And it was only students, basically, that were able to get access. At least I think that's how it went. I could be wrong. They might have changed that.
but don't quote me on that.
we could find that out. We should fact check that one. But all of the people that climb there, like Melise Edwards, a really amazing boulderer that lives out in Washington State. She's also, I think, a neuroscientist now. She just finished her PhD. But she's a pro. So I got to climb with her. Like, she and I hung out all the time. Leanne Lockhart is another. I don't know if she actually went pro. Super strong. Like, she started climbing when she was a 10. Like, super, like, great climber. And then there were local heroes like Anthony Love and Joey Henson and Lisa that had just been around forever, and they put up most of the climb. So they taught. Like, they didn't have an issue with just saying, no, you need to get your footwork right, or hold you up on the wall and say, figure it out. I'm not letting you down until you figure it out.
Yeah, you were at the right place with the right people at the right time.
Absolutely, yeah. So every day at lunch, so my work schedule was insane because I was going to school full time. I had a kid at home and I had to support a family. So I worked full time and I went to school full time, and I did lunch. My lunch break was going to the gym and just, I call it the codfish approach, just throwing myself at everything on the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah. Right? Like, I have no time. Go, 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 go.
And I could never campus. I still, to this day, can't campus to save my life. But I would try to get on the campus board. And I swam a lot. And then did a lot of hiking with my kiddo on my back. And then went outside any chance I got. So usually that meant get home from school, cook some dinner, grab Scout, my son, and put him in the car and go out to the boulder field and meet up with people for that 2 hours before the light. We lost the light. And then try to do two or three trips a season just to get out.
I'm listening to you, and you are amazing. You can't see these people, but I'm teary-eyed and I'm smiling. I'm a single mother, and man, we always find excuses to just not do something because mm-hmm. we're either too stressed or too tired. Yeah. And I'm also a full-time student and I work full-time as well. And then I have my little one and I stopped climbing because I thought that I didn't have time. But now that I listen to you, no, I just gave during totally my lunch break. We do have time, people. Yeah. We have to just find a way to make things work. You are amazing. And how
thank you.
Does your son climb too?
Oh, yeah. No, he loves climbing. He's a little Spider-Man. So this is my favorite. He'll hate me for this. My favorite memory of him was we were at the Red, and I this is a great picture, but we were setting up for a climb, and we were waiting because, like, even then, 10 years ago, or not even 10, like 8 years ago, it was packed at the Red. And so you basically have to set up your rope and wait or jump in with another crew. But if you wanted to project something, then you really had to wait until everybody was done with their try hard mode. So we got there and we set up and I put the crash pad down. And he loved to walk around with a sippy cup and a hold brush. And he would just walk around and sip on the sippy cup and then brush the holds. And I finally, like, I stopped hearing the ch-ch-ch-ch, and I had this panic moment of,
oh my God,
I've just lost my child, like, in the middle of Kentucky. This is not good. And I look over, and he was face down on the crash pad. He had the hold brush sticking up in the air like it had fallen over his head, and his sippy cup was out to the side, and his feet were splayed.
Oh my God.
And it was just the best crash pad ad I've ever seen.
Yes. So comfortable.
Yeah. Like, so comfortable a baby can sleep on it, right? So he had a good start, and then it actually wasn't once I got sick, I stopped climbing. Like, I didn't want to touch it, just looking at crimps, like, I just wanted to cry. And I would get Elvis leg on jugs. I couldn't pull myself up. I was also way underweight by the time I got really, really sick. So I was under 100 pounds. And I'm not that short.
Yeah. You know? Well, yeah, like, you know, a lot of climbers go around, like, you know, how small can you get? Like, you know, they stop. But you don't.
You don't want to get that small.
You get past a certain point and it's not...
not good.
Yeah.
Not good. So I had stopped climbing, and it was actually one of Scout's friends had a birthday party at Inspire.
Scout's your son.
Yeah, Scout's my son. And we went to the gym and he fell in love. Like, it was the first time that he had been able to actually climb, like get on something and climb and not be hauled up on a rope. You know,
how old was he?
Must have been six.
Yeah.
Six or seven, I think.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I think one thing that I think is kind of almost an epidemic, like, in today, is I think a lot of parents, the way that they kind of go about parenting their kids is it kind of becomes all about the kids. They don't really bring – you don't see a lot of parents – bring their kids along on their things.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of see that a lot of parents following their kids around and like, what do you want to do? You know, and that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you can kind of bring your kid into your own world and kind of show them that maybe there's a world different than the world that there is going on in their own head, one, maybe they'll discover something like your kid did, but also they're going to be exposed to just a lot more things.
Yeah.
I think. So what, for you, what would you say, I guess do you look at that and think, yeah, everyone should be doing this? Or do you, you know, like, what's your take on that?
On parenting and bringing kids along, or?
Bringing kids along
to
your own thing.
So I think it's a lot about the individual, right? So my son is super willful. Don't know where he gets that. And very much his own person. And had I forced him to go climbing just because I wanted to go, not a chance he ever would have liked it. But giving him the space to explore and develop as a person and see what he likes. Like, he's discovered right now, he is not the kind of person that should be competing. And he made that decision, and I am super proud of him for making that decision, because it was messing with his head so bad that he stopped liking climbing, stopped liking it. Yeah. And that wasn't, he was like, I want to climb and I want to go outside, so I don't want to compete because right now I can't handle that defeat. Like, yeah. It's just not good for me.
And that's like a mature, like, you don't see many kids making mature decisions like that.
But giving him the space to do that, I think, is important. I think a lot with parenting, so we have this conversation all the time in our house, but I think a lot of parenting today is either parenting by accessory, where it's you have a child because it's something to do, or because it's supposed to be what's next, or you hovercraft parent and you keep the kid so engaged in so many activities that they don't discover who they are. And I think there's a gentle balance to be had there, where you give them the space to explore and make mistakes and fail, but also the skills that they need to succeed. I also think that people like to bounce from thing to thing because they like to collect hobbies, or they like to collect skills, or when something gets to the point where it's no longer fun, it's easy to put it down and pick up something else that's fun. My personal motto on it is, you don't stop when it gets hard, that's when you start working.
Yeah.
And it takes patience, and it takes fortitude and just grit that, yeah. I think if you don't learn how to do that, then it's really hard to overcome some of the challenges that you're going to face as an adult. And so I always say to my husband, you know, I'm not here to raise a man child, I'm here to raise a man, right? And yeah. And he has to be fully capable of leaving a mark on the world that's better than he found it.
That's
and
great.
If he can't, then I didn't do my job as a parent. So if it's the activities, if it's bringing them along to an activity, great. I tried my hardest to get him involved in horsemanship, and he wasn't into it, right? Like, totally not, until we took him to the rodeo, and then he spent 3 nights this past week just roping, trying to learn how to rope.
I like it now.
And he's like, awesome. I think I like this. I want a bull ride. This is awesome.
Oh my God. Talk about safety though.
Yeah, oh, right? But it's like, let them come to it.
Yeah,
and
explore,
be little people.
And explore. If they don't explore, they won't be able to know what they truly are passionate about.
Exactly.
So I agree with you on that aspect. Of course, as mothers it's a little challenging. I take my son outdoor as well, and I once wrote a post that every time he's exploring, my heart stops, but I don't want him to stop either, because I want him to be a confident man and secure about himself. So if I show him that I'm worried about him, it will be a way of showing that I don't necessarily trust. It's a mental game. You're like, oh my God, how much do I let go, etc. And talking about that, because you are a decent quote-unquote climber, so you know the risks of the discipline, and now your son's very involved as well as the family. Do you have any securities, or, okay, this is our safety measures, or this is the contract that we have, this is the way that we do things?
So, yeah, we're big into safety in our house. The first thing is, before any trip, like even to the gym, you're checking your gear, like every single time. You check the rope, you check your shoes, you check any carabiners, any dog bones. You're checking all of it. And we retire gear on a regular basis. And we mark it with red tape, and it goes in a box, and we'll use it for things other than climbing if we need it. The other thing is, we do the climber's contract every single time we climb. And even though this is how I'm dating myself here. So double back, right? Both legs, yeah. and your waist belt. We still do that, even though harnesses are set to be double back now. Yeah. But it's just a check. Like, have you looked at your leg loops, and have you looked at your waist belt? And if you haven't, then you're not getting on the wall. And we go through, you know, are you on belay? Belay is on, climbing, climb on. Before we leave the ground, anytime we're outside, we talk about what's the procedure when you get to the top. Are you going to go off belay? Are you going to do a fireman's belay on the way down? Are you going to rappel? How long should I give you? Are we able to talk? If we can't, what's the communication method that we're going to use? And my husband, Mead, is really great about that because he was an Eagle Scout, or he is an Eagle Scout, and he started climbing in the 90s when the gear was still evolving, right? And like they were still discovering what was safe. And so he's kind of seen the evolution of the sport, and he started on trad. I started with boulders. We compromised and started sport climbing together, right?
It's meet each other halfway.
Yeah. Awesome. So he's really good about the gear and knowing when something's bomber. And if we're going to a new crag, he'll be the first up the wall to say, are these the anchors okay? Can we use those? Or are we going to have to build our own and before we put somebody on top rope? Safety is key. And understanding the risk. Like right now, Scout, that was my phone. So right now, Scout doesn't lead. But we talk to him all the time about you don't get on a climb unless you're willing to take the worst fall you can imagine. And then practice falling. So every time Mead and I go to the gym, we're up on the wall and, you know, you'll hear us announce falling and fall, and we'll just keep doing it until we're super comfortable every single time. It never fails.
It's beautiful that you share this as a family. It's a discipline that you're able to share together. How did the diagnosis change that dynamic?
So I didn't climb. We started again after Scout was like, I want to do this. And I had to fight my way back to a place where I could climb. So I guess it started with us going to the gym, and I couldn't get on 5/8. Like, getting on a jug haul just hurt. But I could belay. And then I was like, I don't feel confident with my hand strength to belay. So I want to do all the belay classes that I can. And then it was like, I want to do all the lead classes I can. And just rebuilding foundational confidence as a group. And then training and really just doing the 5/8s, projecting 5/9s. Getting to 5/10s, and then I've kind of plateaued at 5/11-ish, pretty much, because it gets too small. But I can belay Mead on a 5/12 project, and that's the hardest he's ever climbed, and so he's doing really great. And yeah. Scout's projecting 11 pluses, and he's doing really good on those. And we just came back from Waco. We went on a trip with the climbing team this past Christmas break, and they were crushing it. They were getting on some really hard stuff, and I was super proud to see that. I started playing on things. So it's like the thing that's really weird about it for me personally with the diagnosis is some days I can be super strong. And I can pull pretty hard, and then the next day I can go back and I can't wrap my hand around the hold, like, just it won't close. So I've had to learn to accept, like, there will just be high gravity days. But it's like one day at Waco, I just decided we were at the warm-up wall, which is this long exposure of syenite. And there's a crack that runs along it, and you can just traverse as long as you want before topping out on some pretty stiff moves. And there's like V4s, there's a couple of V7s, there's a V2, and then way off to the left end overlooking this gorgeous valley is something called 1010. And I think it's a 10. From the name, I don't know that I believe that it's a 10 because I was actually able to get on it, right? Wow. Like, so it was super fun, But it's this compression-y climb on a near horizontal roof, and it's all about really tenuous feet, but all of the holds are really good, and you just kind of slap your way along the wall. And it was super fun to just get on it and say, okay, I can do this one section, and yeah. like I'll just work that one section and then come down and then say, okay, well, can I do the next section? And I didn't send it, of course, but it was just really, it's one of those climbs where, and this is what I love about outside climbing, you see a line that's just so pretty that it's like, I don't care what the grade is. I just want to climb that because I appreciate that rock. Like, that's just really pretty.
And disconnect.
Yeah.
So not being able to button your shirt by yourself is far cry from climbing 5'11".
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, I mean, you skimmed over that process, and yeah. I want to, like, get into that a little more. Yeah. Tell me about how, like, when you're at that point where you can't button your shirt, tell me about how did you get back to being able to do normal
activity.
Everyday things?
So some days I can't, and I spontaneously sprain joints all the time. So right now I'm coming back from a broken hand, a sprained wrist, and a broken arm. And that was super frustrating because that happened like right after Waco, right? So I was like, yeah, I have all these projects. I want to train. Yeah. And then it just shut me down. Like I haven't actually been able to climb in a while. But so the process kind of went like this. So I, at my worst, it was really really bad, and I was living off of IV antibiotics. So with an IV antibiotic, what you do is you go into a doctor's office every day, you sit in what is called an infusion suite, and there are people that may be recent amputees, they may be fighting MRSA, they may have diabetic wounds, they may be chemo patients, and you're hooked up to an IV, so you have an IV in your arm for about 7 days at a time, and they what they do is they give you an antibiotic, and it can take anywhere from an hour to 4 hours to infuse you. And so I was basically living off of that. Finally established enough that I was able to start immunoglobulin replacement therapy. And what that is I live off of other people's immune systems. So thank you for everybody that donates blood and plasma, because I get to live off of your immunity, which is great.
Yeah. So donate blood.
Yes, please, please donate blood, donate plasma, and keep yourself really, really healthy so that you can keep people like me alive. So what I do is once a month I have an infusion that they come to the house and I get hooked up, and they give me plasma, and it's a really scary process because your body can reject it, and if it does, you go into anaphylaxis, and it can happen at any time. So there's a lot of anxiety going into that day, and what it does is it gives me immunity for about 3 weeks, and then by the end of week three, I start getting sick. And I'll be sick for that last week before my next infusion. So that was a game changer. And then, so Mead, it has been trained in traditional Chinese medicine. I was trained in Ayurveda and Native American herbalism. I grew up with Native American herbalism. So between the three of our systems, we were able to come up with herbal concoctions that treated the heat and the cold, like heat pain, cold pain, inflammation, thinning blood, thickening blood, whatever we needed. And so then I lived off teas, and I walked around smelling like an herbal apothecary, right? Like, because like I had liniments on, and I smelled like turmeric, and you know, this.
What do you want?
Like, and it was bad at one point. I was like, what do you need? I'm pretty sure I have it. Like, when people came over, it's like, oh, you're sneezing. I have an herb for that. And they're like, no, really, I don't want any herbs. Like, please stop pushing your herbs on me. It's like, I'm not that kind of herb.
You know? But I'll take that one as well.
You know? So between the two of those, we got to a place where I was able to, like, sit up. Yeah. You know, I was able to start moving right again. And then we got a water rower. And, well, I guess I got that order of operations wrong. First, we got the water rower before I had the IGG approved. And the reason that we got the water rower was my rheumatologist actually said, you know, the Arthritis Foundation, you should check it out. Like, they have all this recommendation for physical therapy. And I got on their forum and people were talking about rowing. Like, that's the only thing I can do that doesn't cause me pain. It's low impact, high intensity. Like, this is good. So I found this amazing indoor rower called the water rower. And it has a water wheel on that sits on its side. And depending on how hard you actually pull, it gives you the resistance of being in water. So if you pull slow, it's really easy resistance. If you pull really hard and fast, it's a lot of resistance.
So no matter what kind of a day you're having,
you can exercise. You can move. So I every single day religiously, 30 minutes a day. And then, so I was doing that, got it back into the gym. We were going twice to three times a week to the gym, and I would just get on stuff, and whatever I could hold on to, I would do. And when I was done, I was done. Big warm-up routine, big cool-down routine. I mean, still today, I'll spend 45 minutes warming up, 45 minutes cooling down, and maybe only 15 to 30 minutes actually projecting something. And then from the water rower, I was able to start doing yoga again, and then I started teaching yoga again as a way to keep me motivated to continue practicing. And then I started using an elliptical. So I started like pressing, getting more impact on the joints. And then I started running. And now I run about 2 miles three times a week. Like, it's not a lot, but that's a huge achievement for me.
Yeah, for sure.
It is a lot.
And, I still row twice to three times a week. I exercise at least an hour almost every day. And that keeps me moving. And when I sprain something, like right now, it was super frustrating. So what I would do is I would just like wear the brace, and then it was, okay, can I move rubber bands with my fingers, right? Can I just keep that tendon moving? And then it was, can I use putty? No, the putty actually hurts. Okay, well, can I just use like a tennis ball and just hold the tennis ball and squeeze the tennis? Yeah. It's super slow recovering because my immune system isn't there, right? Yeah.
I mean, that's like a tenacity that I think not everyone has that kind of tenacity to. Like, I think it would be really, really, really easy if, you know, if something like this happened to me. I think if it happened to anyone who might be listening, that if something like this were to happen to just
give up.
Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, you know? It'd be easier to give up.
What do you think kept you going through like that? What kept you out of just like a deep, dark, endless hole? Did you go into a deep, dark, endless hole?
I cried a lot. I kind of did. I was super pissed off about it. I remember just saying, I'm not gonna be able to climb ever again. And then I was really, really mad. Like, I still get mad because it's like, I should be able to climb that. I know that I have the technique, I know that I have the capability, I should be able to climb that. But then I have to say, at least I'm climbing. So yeah, it was really demoralizing. I just remember, I think the worst of it was, my son was in kindergarten and I had been on IV for 21 days straight. And, so when you have an IV in for that long, like and they're giving you an antibiotic that you're kind of allergic to, it hurts to sleep. It hurts to place your arm on anything. Any sort of, like, blood flowing hurts. And I remember I had this cough that was so bad, and my body was so weak that when I started having these coughing fits, I would collapse onto the ground. And I just remember sitting there going, this can't be it. Like, this, I can't. I don't want my son growing up thinking that this is what it means to have an immune deficiency, because he has it too. And I was just like, I don't want him to think that. And then I also said that I didn't want that to be my reality. And I'm not a person to give up. I'm pretty scruffy. I'm pretty scrappy. My Cody actually comes from coyote. And so I think that's pretty fitting because, like, I don't like to stop.
Yeah.
Even when I probably should, and my husband can vouch for that. Like, I won't. He'll have to pull me off the wall sometimes. Like, you know, you're done. I'm like, it's okay. I just tweaked the figure. He's like, no, I heard a pop. Like, you're done. Yeah. So I think the motivation was knowing that there somewhere in the community someday there would be someone that needed to know that they can't stop and just crawl into bed and not move. And it was really, I think the frustration of it was I knew what mentally I was capable of and where my mental limit was, and that was nowhere near my physical limit.
In your mind, you're still climbing those five, you know.
Yeah,
five,
I could still 14s, I can still look 13s. At them in the gym and be like, oh, yeah, that's a cool move. Yeah,
yeah,
I get that. That's super cool. Or, oh, that's a crappy hole. Yeah. That's going to be terrible. Right. I don't want to grab that. But I can't physically do it, right? Like, I can't physically make my body do it, which still put you into that dark chasm of I hate climbing. It's really funny because I'll be on a route or project, and once I send it, I'm like, I love climbing, this is the best feeling ever. And in the moment when I'm projecting it and I'm failing repeatedly, I'll come down off the wall, it's like, I'm done, I'm freaking done, like, I hate this sucks, this is terrible, I never want to do this again. And
we've all been there, I think.
Yeah, and my husband knows enough now to just, like, let me sit there and just have that moment, and then just be like,
there, there.
Yep, okay. Like, let's go buy you a cup of coffee. Have some coffee, have this Kind bar, and then try again.
What's your favorite Kind bar?
Cinnamon. The cinnamon almond one is super, super good. I like that one a lot. That was the other thing, so I had to go gluten-free. And growing up with fry bread and
what years was this when you started being gluten free?
Yeah.
What year do you remember?
This was 2017, 16.
Okay. So whenever I was young, I went gluten free. I'm not anymore. I probably should be. But whenever I was young, it must have been in 2008. 2008.
When nothing was gluten-free?
There's nothing.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you have, like, the gluten-free movement with, like, all these people.
Oh, I know. It's amazing.
When I went
gluten-free,
there was nothing. There was nothing for me to eat. No. And so I would sneak Oreos and stuff for my friends at lunch and do all these things.
It's gluten-free.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's, like, the worst not gluten-free thing in the world. They're so good, though. It's like gluten, death by gluten. It's so good. That was one of the things that we did was I had to go to an allergen-free diet for a little while, and they said, let's see if that helps. And then I was on an antibiotic for a little bit or a medicine for a little bit that after you're on it for about 5 years, the chance of blindness increases exponentially. Mm. And so it's like, yeah, you'll go blind taking this medicine maybe if it happens. But as soon as you stop taking the medicine, you should go back to being able to see, but then when you go back on the medicine, your chances of being blind sooner. So I was on that for a little bit, and I was approaching the 5-year mark, and I was like, okay, time to, like, not be on this.
Right.
You know, so he was like, well, let's try allergen free. So I did that, and I was like, I love bread. You know? So it was super hard for a while, and then we ended up getting really creative, and we realized what we were actually doing was eating more real food. So we were eating more real protein and more variety of vegetables and a variety of different kinds of flour. And the only thing that still sucks is baking. Like, it's hard to bake well with gluten free. Right.
So you have not gotten used to it.
No, I have. I at this point, when I smell it, like, I can. if we're in a restaurant or something,
you can tell.
I can
what's
tell
gluten free and
when
what's
it's
not.
Like somebody served us a salad at one point, and I was like, that's not actually gluten free. Like,
you can't trick me. Okay.
And this is just a salad, so I don't know what you're doing in the kitchen, but but this is nowhere near gluten free. So we've done pretty good with that.
And attaching it to what you just mentioned, that now when you go climbing, you can actually see the route and you read it perfectly. You're very encouraging of others when they're climbing. Does it have anything to do because of the fact that you can actually see in the future? It's like, this is the next movement or so, or it's just.
I love seeing people succeed at something that they're working hard on. And sometimes all it takes is that little one word of encouragement that gets you over when you're stuck. The first time we went into the gym, I remember we were sitting there and it was silent. It was really a weird gym culture because people didn't talk to each other. It's like people had headphones in or they kind of ignored each other. And there was this random person on the wall and they were struggling for the next move, like reach, fall, reach, fall, reach, fall. And they just weren't extending. Like, they just wouldn't extend. So I just yelled, "You've got this!" And they kind of looked around, like, really confused. And then everybody else gave me this kind of country club look, right? Like, like, who is this person? And why are they yelling? Right? And so it became a personal mission of me and my husband to really just change the culture around us and make it more like an outdoor community where you are encouraging each other. You can just walk up to a route and have three people willing to belay you, and you can trust each other and you know that they have your back. But as far as reading things, it's when I see somebody on the wall, and it's just really they're set in a gym mindset and they're not thinking about it as if it's a three-dimensional problem, it's really hard to not just start spraying beta, like, move your leg up, throw your hip into the wall. It's super hard not to do that, but it's also that's the great thing about climbing is you don't have to spray the beta, because my short person beta isn't going to work for somebody that's 6 foot, right?
Them.
Yeah. So I can just say, yeah, you've got this. The worst thing was going into a comp environment, because it's like you just want to say, yeah, you've got this, go for it, or you've got it, just one more move, or things like that. And you can't say that because you can get the kids disqualified, right? So it's just like, yay, woo, go, yeah. You know, and you're sitting there going, this feels so insincere, but I don't want to disqualify you.
That's one of my favorite things about climbing is the community. And like, that's so awesome that you set out to be the change. You know, you set out to, the culture around us, we're not going to bend to that culture. Like, we're going to set the standard.
Yeah.
And I think that's awesome. And then one of the best things about climbing is I think there's a lot of people out there like that.
Oh, for sure. Are you kidding? I think climbers make some of the best outdoor ambassadors because they legitimately just love being outside.
Like, there's really one like the way I kind of always see it is there's really no good reason to climb. It's dangerous. It's kind of dumb thing to do. Like, just
you can walk up the back.
So the only reason people do it is because they love it. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that you're touching on something, Kaysen, that is really important in the outdoor community right now, which is leave no trace. Because there are so many gyms and so many people, like the Dawn Wall was amazing, Free Solo was amazing, Meru is amazing, all of these climbing films, like Mellow Climbing, super awesome. I'm so glad that somebody brought back a climbing channel, because I missed Dead Point. It was great. So Mellow Climbing is great. But with that comes a lot of interest from a community that doesn't necessarily know the ethics of being outdoors. And mentorship, when I was coming up in climbing, and even way before me, was like the number one way that you learned to climb was you had a mentor, you had somebody that taught you, and they knew the ethics and the sustainability practices that you need, and they drilled it into you. And because access is so easy now, it's very simple for us to mess up and lose a crag and get things shut down. So what I personally would love to see is more gyms offering transitioning to the crag classes of what are the ethics, how do you leave no trace, how are you supposed to rappel, or are you supposed to lower off the gear, or who do you report things to if you see broken gear or broken bolts, what do you do if you see trash, what's the protocol, where do you take it, things like that. Like, I would love to see more gyms do that, and it's sad that more gyms don't recognize the power they have to influence this sport and to influence our outdoor access for the future generations. So
that's great.
And going, attaching that to the aspect that you said, that you have mentors that teach you about sustainability and all of these different practices, attaching it to the background that you have, Ayurveda, and your husband, oh my God, I'm from Venezuela, people, I'm doing my best. Ayurveda, that's how you pronounce it in Spanish.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Mama Dirtbag.
Yes.
How did it start?
So I have another small brand called Dando Vita Elementi, which is life-giving elements. And it came from the fact that I was trying to find pain relief creams that actually worked for me. And then because I couldn't use processed soaps, I had to start making my own soaps. So taught myself that whole process and then started using herbal concoctions to try to manage symptoms and reduce the load on my immune system. And then it ended up helping people. So I was like, well, I'll just try to launch a brand. So I started kind of dabbling in that herbal space and that brand space. And then I was having trouble finding a foothold. And
foothold.
Great pun. And so then what I ended up doing was, meanwhile, we'd started climbing again. And there was a one thing I used to use that was actually for horse care. And it was a hoof moisturizer, and I used that after climbing for my hands, and it was great. I could put it on and get back on my project the next day, but they no longer made it. And so I was like, I want to figure out what works, because there were a lot of climbing balms on the market that didn't quite work. And I was like, I want to find something that's super, super effective and does exactly what you want it to do for the amount of time that you want it. So the first thing was we wanted something to repair hands overnight. And so I was like, okay, so it has to be super emollient. It has to be super moisturizing. It has to help skin readhere if possible. Started researching all that, and that was Flapper Fixer. That gave birth to Flapper Fixer, which is our overnight cream. What I was really concerned about, especially living in a humid environment like Houston, was hand hardener, because it's really easy to start getting micro tears or splits if the skin gets too soft or you have moisture fluctuations. So I was like, okay, where can I go to find stuff for that? And so I started researching what they give new amputees, because I was in infusion suites and I saw amputees all the time, and I knew that they had prescriptions that they could get. And so I found this new amputee prescription formula, and then I started looking at, like, what do cross-country runners and endurance runners do, and found these different formulas and ended up coming up with a mostly as close to herbal as I could get, with the addition of acetone to actually harden, cause the skin to build a barrier to protect itself from the acetone. And so that was hand hardener. That gave birth to hand hardener. And then middle of the day, during lunch, your skin is burning and it's weeping and you've been on the route all, and you don't want to give up yet. I was like, I want something that helps you get back on the wall. And so that was Callus Keeper. And that was a mixture of herbs and cayenne pepper to actually numb the skin a little bit and to help dry it out just enough that it stopped the weeping. And so I made all this stuff, and we started beta testing it at home, and I was like, okay, the real test will be Waco because it's super sharp. Yeah. So we went out, and we sent some of the kids out with it, and we applied it to our hands, like, liberally. And it was our last day there. We were working on 1010, and one of the guys in our group was just like, man, I just don't think I can. I just don't think I can get back on this. Like, my hands are just toast. And I was like, aha, yay.
What up?
And I was like, ta-da.
I think we have something for you here.
Yeah, I was like, I've got something for that. I've got an herb for that. And he was like, yay. And I was like, not that kind of herb.
Yay.
Awesome. So I gave him the Callus Keeper, and I just remember he was really skeptical, but he was like, okay, well, I mean, you're nice, so I'll apply it, right? So he was sitting there, and he was like, man, this is really weird. This is really weird. And I was like, just give it 15 minutes. And he was like, I don't know what kind of voodoo this is, but this is awesome. Yeah. And I was like, yes, that is the reaction I want to get, because I just want to be useful, right? Like, that's been my whole goal with coming back from climbing and being a part of the community, is I want to be useful to the community.
That's awesome.
Yep.
That's incredible. Where can they, if someone's listening to this and wants to try your voodoo, where can they find it?
So we're about to launch the website. Right now we have an Instagram account. It's at Mama Dirtbag. You can also email us at mamadirtbagskincare@gmail.com. But the website's going live this month, so it's March. Hopefully we'll have it launched by about March 15th to March 30th. But in the meantime, you can just email me. And we're sending out beta packs. So if you're in the Houston area, we're trying to get some demo packs placed in all the gyms. And so you can start, like, going to the counter and saying, hey, do you have any of the Mama Dirtbag demo? And we want feedback. So yeah, come see us on Instagram and leave us feedback. And we're trying to crowdsource formulas, too. So if you see something that you want and you're like, man, I really wish I just had X, then let us know, because at this point I have almost a decade worth of experience making soaps and tinctures and things that, like, we can come up with a solution.
Yeah.
And if we can't, then that's a really good challenge.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah.
I'll find a solution.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So yeah, guys, I mean, if you're listening, if you made it this far, please go check that out. It's awesome. It's amazing, yeah, how you've been able to use, like, your past experience, yeah, and then, you know, kind of bringing all that knowledge forward and then creating this, like, awesome company.
Yeah, I'm super excited.
Something beautiful out of all the struggle.
Yeah.
Like you said, be useful.
Be useful.
Be useful. Awesome, guys. Well, it was great having you.
Thank you so much. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank
it's
you
super
so
fun.
Much. For opening our eyes and just being so amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. That's it, guys. Thank you.